Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show, and I just want to take some credit for bringing us in on that music because it didn't blow your eardrums out. I thought that was smooth, Matt. Was that not? I thought that was good.
That's success. You know, we celebrate the small things, and you know, learn how to control the volume knob. That's one of the things that, you know, would take us 100 shows to master, but we got there.
We got it. We got it there. And, you know, for those regular listeners that send me an email once in a while going, dude, your intro outro music is like blaring in my ear. And then you guys are too soft. We're working on it. You know, Matt and I are running we got Jennifer in the studio taking calls, but Matt and I are on the controls. It's not pretty. And so we are looking for that sponsor that will pay for real professionals. So I am drinking my Rockstar today. So I want to just reach out to Rockstar executives again saying, this could be the best place you could spend your advertising dollars. I mean, we're here.
Oh yeah.
We're drinking rock stars on our show every week.
Yeah. Our audience is their target market, really. I mean, that's where they're going.
Producers. Yeah. That's what you want. You want people moving and shaking, but even if it's from caffeine and good, you know, taurine, that's okay. You know, we're moving and shaking. We're doing something.
Yeah.
So anyway, for all of you that are new listeners, thank you for listening to the show today. We've got a great show planned. This is all about building wealth, saving taxes, protecting your assets, small business questions. I'm an attorney, CPA, my partner, Matt Sorensen, author, attorney, just extraordinary child genius. I say that because he graduated from college like twice as fast as I did. So to me, he's a genius. Even if it wasn't intellectual prowess, it was get crap done prowess, something. But we're here. We're here. So thanks everybody for listening. It's the Refresh Your Wealth Show every week. And we want to give a shout out to our live listeners. We're on Blog Talk Radio. You can listen from your computer. You can dial in on your phone. During open forum, which is every 3 to 4 weeks where we field your questions, you want to put that on your calendar, call in live on those days. We take live caller question priority. We really love our live callers for open forum shows. So write this down. So it's every Wednesday at noon is the show, Mountain Time. And the phone number to call in is 646-668-8326. Then you can listen live from your phone, wherever you're at in your on your Bluetooth device while you're at work, building your wealth. Woo! That's where it's at.
Yeah, and keep in mind, you can also find the show on iTunes. You can find prior shows under the Refresh Your Wealth podcast on iTunes. That's where we have the majority of our listeners. And thanks for everybody for catching the show there. Also, refreshyourwealth.com, another great resource to get prior shows and learn about upcoming shows as well. So, well, Mark, I'm particularly excited in this topic today, how to turn your residence into a rental. We're going to have Steve Olson. He's a real estate broker, national expert on rental properties. We'll bring him on a little bit later in the show. But I don't know if you noticed, I have my last two residences I turned into rentals. So I've been down this road a little bit myself and have had some interesting questions about what I should or shouldn't do. I'm actually excited to talk about this and get some of your input and Steve's input as well.
I think it's great. And, you know, Matt had the unique opportunity, everyone, of living in the hood. So it was easy to turn his prior homes into kind of a white trash, you know, low income housing project. So, but, you know, we don't all have
that
luxury.
It was a double wide. I mean, it was a classy place. It's a double wide. Come on.
Yeah, I love that I could, you know, fill up my drink at the fridge and go to the bathroom at the same time. It was a little tight, but, you know, it was, it's like it was an RV type size.
Good accommodation you get.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So we got a great show on that topic. Also, we are going to call this the family reunion show because we've got tip and a legal tip about that really precarious, uncomfortable experience that all of you are going through right now. It's that time of year. It is family reunion time. Oh, wow. We needed a jingle for that, kind of like the Family Feud, you know, jingle from the show. That would have been really good. Right? I set it up for a jingle and I didn't have it. See, this is why we need a sponsor so we could have someone in the studio doing that sort of thing. But no, this is, we got some great tips on the family reunion. Matt, do you want to go first with the legal tip? What are you feeling?
Yeah, I got a legal tip about what's going to come up at the family reunion and, you know, what type of protection you're going to want to put on to save yourself from your own family.
Okay. I'm not going to touch that one. Okay. All right. Here we go.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, you're not going to need a shower after this one, but you might want to wash your hands because doing business with family can get dirty. Let's be honest. You may be at the family reunion. You may be thinking about some new business idea that you're interested in. You're talking to family. You got maybe family member, Uncle Eddie or whoever it may be, hitting you up for some investment in some crazy idea. And it happens at my family gatherings. Just the last family gathering I went to, everybody's talking about some new business and, you know, you should get involved in this and invest in that.
Hold on. Let me ask. Matt, did you get the – hey, Matt, I got a quick question.
Yeah, quick question. Yeah. Quick question. That's like
an hour answer.
Yeah, and it's like fingernails on the chalkboard for me. It's like, oh, this is going to be painful. Mark and I, we have the perspective of hearing from lots of clients and a lot of businesses are family businesses, whether it's spouses or siblings or parent, child, whatever it may be. I mean, a lot of businesses operate that way. And that's, you know, that's the usual suspects. You need money. You need someone's help on a certain thing. You need a partner. I mean, you're going to go to your family members, those you trust, have a close relationship, as you should. But I want to give two quick legal tips about doing business or investments with family. Now, the first thing I want to point out is have a partnership agreement. This is something anybody you're going to partner with or go into business with, you want to document and have a contract about what the roles of the parties are, who's supposed to do what, what's your responsibilities, what's your authority. There's a lot of things you want to put into a partnership agreement. And Mark and I have done prior shows on what to put in a partnership agreement. But when it comes to the family, it's even more important. This is someone you're going to see at the family reunion. You're going to see him maybe on Sunday dinners or certain family activities or grandpa's birthday, Christmas, whatever it is, Thanksgiving. You're going to see these people. If your business or investments aren't going well, or if there's some misunderstanding about what's supposed to happen and what expectations there may have been, it's going to be uncomfortable. And that affects your family life. And so that's a big negative drain on yourself. And it's an even more incentive to make sure that you have a partnership agreement, is so that you set expectations, you make sure it's very clear what roles and responsibilities people have. And that's tip number one. Get a partnership agreement, put it in writing.
Yeah. And I think that lack of documentation is why there's a lot of drinking at family reunions. They've got to find some way to cope. It's a coping mechanism and they know that they're going to see their family there. So they're like, just load up the cooler. Yeah. We cannot.
Got to get liquored up to deal with so-and-so.
Yeah. This is heavy duty stuff. And this is probably, again, another slippery slope domino effect towards the ultimate fight that happens in the parking lot outside of the family reunion. So you want to prevent this. This is your opportunity to step up and go, hey, I know we're going to be family. We want to maintain this relationship. Let's put down our expectations in writing. We're not even talking about an entity. You may need an LLC or corp, but at least put down your freaking agreement in writing. Ugh. If it's ever important, it's important with family.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing I just want to say is the other item in family business, which is really critical, is a buy-sell agreement. This is also an agreement. This is a document that outlines what happens if one of the parties dies or gets divorced or becomes disabled or wants to just leave the business. You're going to have a buy-sell agreement that says, how are we going to break up the business when one of us has some departure? Again, death, they want to get out, they get divorced, and you know, maybe it's your brother-in-law in the business now, and you know, you're not going to want to be, brother-in-law gets divorced to your sister. Well, that's going to be awkward. So you want to have those types of documents, a buy-sell agreement, consider that. Also really important for, you know, parent-child. Maybe it's mom and daughter in a business, or dad and daughter, or son, or whatever it is. But you know, let's say one of the parents passes on. Well, what do the other siblings think? Do they get the business, or does the partner child who was involved get the business? You know, how is that parent share broken up? So think of that. If there's been a lot of issues I've had on that situation over the years, and just having a good buy sell agreement that says what happens on events of departure is very helpful. So consider that even more important in the family business.
And I love it. And I just had a consult on Friday last week where we were talking about one of the siblings that's taking care of mom and dad and doing business together. The son doesn't even live nearby. And she was talking about how, yeah, when they pass away, they're going to leave half of the business and the real estate to this other sibling. And I'm like, hold, you know, I thought you were working in the business. Yeah, but, you know, this is how it goes. And I'm like, slow down. This weekend, you're going to have a meeting with mom and dad and talk about the business and maybe some life insurance, something where they could set up some cash or some equity for that family member. But let's make sure the business stays with you. You don't want to have your brother as a partner, do you? And she's like, oh my gosh, no. Well, if we don't talk about it now, you know, it could be a nightmare. And this is what tears families apart. So I think another word for, or another couple terms that Matt is referring to when he says buy-sell agreement, is having your estate plan coordinated with your business exit strategy, having a long-term, a business succession plan. You're going to hear terms like that: business succession plan, buy sell agreement, an LLC operating agreement, heaven forbid, is going to have some terms in there. So just, guys, I know when it's family, it's easy schmeasy, shake hands, you're eating Kentucky Fried Chicken and you're sitting around the family reunion picnic table and it's all good, but watch out, you know, buckle up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, are we ready for this tax tip? This is going to be good.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Now, I want to talk about how to write off your family reunion. How to write off that extra bucket of KFC you bought on the way to the reunion. How to write off that plane ticket where you had to sit with family, you know, all the way there, and you were miserable contemplating this family reunion that you were going to be stuck at all day long, and hopefully it wasn't a 2 to 3 day event. How do you get a tax write-off for this? I might even throw a little extra communication tips around family reunions, but let's talk numbers first. So here is your opportunity, folks, to take a tax write-off for all these expenses to get there, and that entails closing some business while you're there. You just can't talk about it. You got to sell something. You got to go visit your rental property nearby. This is a great opportunity to shop for rentals in the, you know, the good old hometown where you went for the family reunion, and then have your uncle start taking over as property manager. Maybe, I don't sure if that's a good idea, but you, this is your chance to visit a rental property, make an offer on a rental property, or for all of you out there, all of you, what am I, like New Jersey? All of you out there. Okay, any of you out there that have a multi-level marketing business, an internet marketing business, you're selling a product or service, throw a bunch of crap in the trunk, and at the family reunion, pop it open. Start selling jerky. Start selling Cutco knives. Maybe you got some Melaleuca. You got some, you know, some Avon. You got some lotions and potions. Close some sales. This is not just a family reunion. It's a business conference. This is a chance to write off right off, because you're going to sell some product. You're going to sell a service. Good stuff. Now, also, something I talk about in my book, and something that's really an emotional issue, is that being an entrepreneur is lonely. You need to have that board of advisors, that board of directors. This is a chance to recruit a few family members. Say, I'm going to have my board of directors meeting. I'm going to have a board of advisors meeting tonight. I'm going to barbecue afterwards, and we're going to talk business. I need your advice. And maybe you've got some family members that have been really successful in business, and you want their input. Everybody loves to give free advice for a quality meal. Take them out to dinner when you're in town. Have your board of directors meeting. Matt, I mean, we could go on and on. Is this not just the perfect opportunity for a write-off?
Yeah, I love – I mean, you might need to step it up from KFC, but – or maybe at least throw in some mashed potatoes, you know, some coleslaw. Don't just bring some fried chicken.
Get the family meal.
You know, you want to get quality advice. You want to get the right people showing up from the family to this, and that might take some mashed potatoes. Just consider that.
I love KFC gravy. It is like there's a secret weapon in there. I think they put crack in that KFC gravy. I mean, when I get to the family reunion, I'm headed straight to the, you know, coleslaw and KFC tables. But okay, now here's a couple other tips to kind of think about this. It was so funny. I was at a family reunion this week, and I'm talking to these older guys at the reunion now, and I'm like, so, you know, and of course, anybody, this is how you got to mingle. And so if you need an icebreaker, anybody that's over 70 years old, just go up and sit down and say, hey, have you had any surgeries lately? Boom. You are in the dry. I mean, you're done. You're going to have a full on conversation for at least 20 minutes. You're going to learn about things you never wanted to know about, but at least you're not sitting there looking like a dunce and nothing to talk about. So just bring up the topic of surgeries. Hey, do you know a good doctor? Oh my gosh. I was captivated. I was done. I had two or three conversations. Everybody thought I was a superstar because all I did was talk about their doctors and surgeries. So that's a big way in. Now, what was funny too is these guys. Now, here's on this point too. I'm talking to these guys and I'm like, so how's it going, uncle, whatever, you know? And he's like, I'm just trying to stay busy. I'm like, I'm trying to not stay busy, but you're looking for work? Great. We're going to have a little board of directors meeting where I need your advice. And when you tell, and I'm on an emotional side note here, when you go to those family members, the grandpa, the grandmas, the aunts, the uncles, they really do have a lot of wise life experience. This is a serious thing, and this is a wonderful way to bond with family members and say, hey, I could really use your advice. My business is in a transitionary point. I've just started this new education system. I'm really trying to do this. I'm really trying to do that. I could use your advice. Could we hook up later and I'll buy you dinner? And I'm going to ask, you know, uncle and aunt and grandpa to come over too. And I just really want to learn from you guys. Oh my gosh, this is what they've been waiting for you to say for years, because you were this snot-nosed brat at the family reunion, wrecking the family car out with the other cousins. But now you're there and you're asking for advice. Oh, perfect opportunity to bond, build wealth, get a tax write-off, baby. There you go. There's my tip, Matt. I'm throwing down. I threw down everything I could on the family reunion.
Well, now there's finally a reason to go to the family reunion. So thanks for clearing that up for me. And I think some of our listeners are in the same boat.
Yeah. Now, if you really don't have a family reunion to go to, you can go to something similar. You could watch the Republican convention on TV this week. I mean, that would be probably just as good.
Also a meeting of people you generally don't want to hang out with, who are always fighting, mad at each other, and who like to hear themselves talk. And
you've got all the ingredients. It's the same recipe for disaster.
Right. Yep. Same story, different place.
Yeah. And you've always got the old guy that married some hot young wife, AKA Donald Trump, that, you know, she's going to get up and talk and everybody's like, come on, please. See, it's the same thing. It's just a different size of family reunion. It's the Republican convention. Go visit. Pick it up. C-SPAN. There you go.
Don't worry. We'll make fun of the Democrat convention in a couple weeks, whenever that is. So stay tuned for that. We're equal opportunity offenders. So we like to offend both sides.
Yeah, that's right. Well, okay. Well, enough about this. We do try to keep this humorous and educational. I am not kidding about this. I love those tax strategies that come along with family. And it's a whole chapter in my book. If you haven't picked it up, Tax and Legal Playbook, get to Amazon, get to Audible. It's now available on audiobook. And be considerate of family. Talk about the legal agreements, get them in writing. When you start worrying about their interest, it just goes a long way, and they're going to see the maturity and the business prowess that you have when you're willing to put it in writing. If you're not willing to put it in writing, you're already losing points with someone. So a great tip, Matt, on the legal end. And folks, enjoy those family reunions. Woo! Tis the season.
All right. Well, let's jump into this topic here and start peeling away the onion, so to speak, about turning your residence into a rental. So what we want to talk about today, and this is a common scenario that happens, is you buy a home, you live in it, you own it, it's been your residence, it's been your home, you've been there, your family's been there, and whatever the circumstance is, you're now moving. Maybe you're changing jobs, you're moving towns, you're upgrading, you're downgrading, I don't care what it is, but we have a theme here of you're leaving that residence. And the question is, how do I turn that into a rental? We want to talk about, should I turn it into a rental? Talk about some of the financial and tax considerations you want to be thinking about as you're making that decision. And I'm, like I said before in the beginning here, I've done this twice. I still have two of those properties that are homes I used to live in with my family that are rentals. And it's frankly, for me, it's one of the easiest ways to build a rental portfolio. Just don't sell your real estate. Just buy another one and keep it. So, but let's start jumping into that, Mark. I don't know if you had any initial comments or what order you wanted to go in here with Steve or any other tax issues.
No, I love it. Let's just open the Pandora's box. And I think it's going to come up today is, what if I want to just rent a room or rent a basement or rent the upstairs? And kind of maybe you're going to have a partial rental in your home. I'm sure that issue will come up and we can address that a little bit. We got a lot to cover. So Steve Olson, he's been on our show before. Great guy. He's highly educated in real estate investing. He's a national advisor. He's a broker. He speaks around the country. He's just done a phenomenal job for a lot of our clients. We love to send clients his direction for those that are looking for a portfolio and maybe a state where they don't live, but they may travel to for a family reunion. Who knows? So Steve might have a great little portfolio of real estate that could be a great fit for you. So we love him. He's been a great addition to our show over the years. So I guess without any further ado, Steve, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Hey, guys, always a pleasure. Although, when did KFC become an unofficial sponsor of the show? You guys are all over that today.
Well, yeah, well, I don't know. They come with the family reunion. I don't think we'll talk about KFC again. Definitely rock stars, but no, it's yeah. KFC's.
They've just been making great chicken. It's finger looking good. And so whether they pay for it or not, they've earned that right to get those.
Well, I'll have to swing some KFC by, and I've got a rock star in my hand right now too, so I'm loaded for bear.
All right. Well, hey, on a technical side note, as we're getting rolling here, I brought Jennifer out on the line. Jennifer, are you hearing that static too? Or is it just me?
Yeah, I'm hearing the static a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. And it looks like I have isolated to Steve's connection. So what we're going to do is, Steve, I'm going to just ask you to hang up and dial back in, and let's try to bring you back out. I just muted you because there was quite a bit of static coming through your connection. So hopefully we can resolve that. Jen, thanks so much. Let me know when you get Steve back on the line. Now, maybe while we're getting Steve back, I want to bring up this partial rental. Let's just get that out there. I probably had two calls last week with clients that are renting a part of their home. This is actually quite common in Hawaii, more so than many of you would imagine. It's kind of the Ohana strategy. There's actually a term, you know, in Hawaiian language for that, this Ohana strategy, because it's so expensive to live in Hawaii, and families will rarely depart with their real estate. Like Matt was saying, once you own it, you don't want to be getting rid of it unless you have to harvest that equity. So we love the sweep company, the sweep strategy, where you try to pay down your mortgage and build equity, and then use that equity to buy other rentals, but you never get rid of your home. So a lot of people will rent a portion of their home. Now, I'll address the tax side. Matt, maybe you can talk about some of the issues of renting out part of your home and what some of your options are for asset protection, which is challenging. But from a tax perspective, I know this is being recorded and nationally broadcast, and I don't want to get in trouble with the IRS, but I'm going to be honest. A lot of times, especially if it's just a small portion of your home, it's just something you do under the table. You collect some rent. You don't claim your home as part rental. You don't worry about the depreciation. You don't claim expenses, and you don't claim the income. And the reality is when it's de minimis, it's immaterial. And most IRS agents recognize that if it's immaterial, meaning that it's just not a lot of dollars on the table, and if we were to depreciate, you'd be getting a net loss anyway. By the time you run the numbers, you've got a write-off more than you have a gain. But it's the paperwork nightmare. And so from a tax perspective, I do oftentimes encourage clients to look at that option first, depending on the size of what you're doing when you're renting a portion of your home. The second option is you take a square footage piece of the home, turn it into a rental on the books. There will be depreciation. You'll write off a portion of your mortgage interest, a portion of utilities, a portion of property taxes, and you're going to look at, if my home is 2,000 square feet and I'm going to rent out half of it, then half of all those expenses are write off and half of it's depreciated, and then you're going to collect your rent and you're going to put it on a Schedule E on your tax return as a rental property. Again, you might see some tax benefits actually come through with that, and depending on your classification as a real estate professional or active or passive investor, again, a major topic in a chapter in my book and on videos online, but you can study up on that as a real estate investor. But keep in mind, when you go to sell your home, you're going to have to do a 1031 exchange because part of your home is now a rental. So you have part personal residence, part rental. And it's a bed and breakfast quandary. It's a duplex quandary when you're living in half. So you really want to understand what you're signing up for when you do that. A lot of clients will ultimately turn the home into entirely a rental, but they'll start by renting a portion of it. If you do go to sell it, you're only going to pay tax on the rental portion, not the sale of home exemption, depending on amounts. So it's a big topic. When you go to rent part of your home, you can see that a conversation might be helpful. You can give me a call, talk to any of our CPAs on that, on the tax side of it. How is it going to look on your tax return? Matt, what about the legal exposure of renting a portion of your home? What advice would you give there?
Well, that's a tricky one. The first thing I would say is, and when we're thinking about asset protection, always think first of what risk do I have? Now, a typical single family rental where you're not at every day and you don't know the person as well, you have a lot more liability, I think, because, you know, you're not there every day, you don't know what's going on, and someone's in control of that entire property. So we're more inclined to recommend LLCs for clients owning rental properties as an asset protection measure. Now, when it's a rental in your own home, maybe it's the basement in your home or whatever it may be, I'm less inclined to recommend an LLC for a couple of reasons. One is there's less risk. Again, you're going to be there every day. You live there. Two, you probably know this person better, or you're going to screen them a lot more carefully than you are some other tenant at a single family rental or an apartment building or whatever else you may own. So this is going to be typically a different tenant type. And it also causes some tax issues. If you add LLCs, you can lose the sale of home exemption depending on how you do it. So what I would say is don't automatically jump to doing an LLC when it's the rental in your own home where you're still living at some part of it. My default would probably be don't do an LLC in that scenario, whereas our default is do an LLC if it's a property you're not at, like a single family rental or, you know, duplex apartment building, whatever it may be. So a little bit different analysis. I know it's a little nuanced, but some of those details definitely matter in the asset protection.
I like, and I would just add to it, this is an important reason to talk to your insurance agent. Go into your homeowner's insurance agent and say, I am renting a portion of my home. They may add a rider or some other provision or something to the policy, and it may cost you $50 more a month or something. But guys, you don't need that renter slipping and falling, getting out of the tub or in the kitchen, or they're coming in and out of the house and they fall. You're going to find out real quick they consider themselves a tenant, and they could sue you and you could lose the entire home. So you want to make sure you have some insurance. I think that's I totally agree with Matt. An LLC isn't going to do much because the home is in the LLC. You're trying to protect your home from other rentals when you do an LLC for those other rentals. But here, the LLC is the actual basket where you're living as well. So this is where insurance could never be more important. Think of umbrella as well. Think of the homeowners and renter policy, all those little things. Go have an in-depth conversation with your insurance agent. Okay. Well, Matt, I did a little test here, and Steve, you're back on the line, and I don't hear any static. Steve, you there?
I'm here, ready to go, guys.
Oh, you sound great. Now, I just wanted one part of our introduction, too, and then we're going to turn this over, Steve, for a little introduction of your own, of what you're doing. But Matt was anxious to tell me when we scheduled this, that and we scheduled this weeks ago, is that Steve said, I'm helping an average of two people a week turn their prior home into a rental. And he's got some unique strategies to that. So I was excited to hear about that. So, Steve, tell us about what you're doing and how common this is, and we want to start pilfering you with some questions.
Sure. A lot of people have started calling this whole concept house hacking, right? Mm-hmm. And you had alluded to it earlier in the show that this is a great way to accumulate rentals because the financing for owner-occupied homes is much better than investor mortgages and things like that. So you obviously have to occupy the home for a certain period of time. But then if you decide you're going to move or for whatever reason you want to convert this, that financing's still in place, and it's awesome financing. But I think that the first question people have to ask is, well, should they really do this? Just because you can do it doesn't mean that you should. And I think that everybody's going to benefit by getting an independent real estate agent to run a CMA on their property and do what's called a net sheet for them. If they
could you explain, Steve, could you explain what CMA and net sheet means? Define that for us.
Comparative market analysis. It's a pretty common term amongst agents. They'll know what you're talking about when you say that. And that's when they pull all the figures for the surrounding market and they say, you know what, we could probably get an offer for X amount of dollars on your house within 30 days of listing it. And, most people think, okay, great, I'm going to get X. But there's a net sheet involved. The net sheet means how much money is left at the end of the day after you pay closing costs, title fees, and concessions, and all those kinds of things. How much money do you actually have? Because based on how much money is left, you might be able to make more of a difference elsewhere with that money as opposed to turning your home into a rental. Or you might not. But I've never been against knowing what your options are. So I think that's the first thing that people should do. And one thing I've seen people get burned on here, guys, this is relatively new in the marketplace, is all these home loan modifications that have happened since 2006 or so. And if a lot of times when somebody's wanting to turn their home into a rental, there may be some financial distress there, right? They owe too much or they can't afford to sell it for some reason. And if that fact is present, maybe that person got a home loan modification. And what happens is, when you get one of those, the lender usually tax whatever amount you were delinquent on the back of the loan, and it doesn't show up on your monthly mortgage statement. So I've seen homeowners think, oh, yeah, I only owe $220. And really, there's a balloon payment on the back of that thing for another $40,000. So it's important to get a payoff statement from your lender because your actual mortgage statement that comes in the mail might not be accurate or it might be buried in the fine print somewhere. Believe it or not, I've seen that burn a few people. So if you've got a home loan modification or if you ever got one, make sure you understand what you really owe. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to give some quick tips here for people so they know what information do I need to know about my situation to make a good decision here. And I think the first piece of information you talked about is this net sheet, which is essentially figuring out, if I sell my property now, what equity do I have and what am I going to get at closing? After all closing expenses,
mortgage, everything.
Everything gets paid off. What am I going to get net money? And then I think the next question, Steve, too, and maybe you can talk about this, is getting an analysis of what can your property rent for in the market you're at, and also determine, and probably next is, What can I do with that cash? If I instead sold the property and use that cash somewhere else, should I sell my residence, get the equity out, and use that cash to buy a rental somewhere else? Maybe you can walk us through those steps. I presume that's where you may want to go with this, right?
Now, you and I must be drinking the same flavor of Rockstar today. Yeah, that's exactly where I wanted to go. Yeah. So
that's the yellow recovery. Yeah. I want to point that out. Okay, go ahead.
I usually go with that one, but actually not today. But yeah, that's a good point, because if you're going to do a net sheet and analyze what happens, how much cash is left if I sell this, well, the alternative is to rent it. And what's it going to rent for? So I would get a couple of property managers over to your place, and they're going to do a couple of things. They're going to say, hey, look, the market rent for this house is going to be X. So, you know, based on your current mortgage and expenses, approximately how much cash flow you're going to have. And they're also going to give you repair suggestions. If we're going to rent it for X, wow, we really need you to fix this. We really need you to do that. So now, you know, okay, I may have some additional expenses on top in order to get this thing into top rental condition. Because then you can compare. You can go, I might walk away from the closing table if I sell this with $100,000. Or if I rent it, I might be able to get the depreciation. I might be able to get a bunch of cash flow. And over time, that's actually going to be better for me. Now, a lot of times reasons people are considering this, though, is they got to move for a job or something. And selling it might not be an option. They might have to go short, do a short sale on this thing. And so I think it absolutely makes sense. Instead of you writing the check for the short sale, have a tenant write the checks, have them pay down that extra principal you owe above and beyond the market value. So you have to know those numbers, and then you have to know what your alternatives are in order to make the best decision. And sometimes this is really great. You're really going to advance things. Other times using your property as a rental is the worst of some bad, or is the best of some bad decisions, right? It's better than going short, giving it back to the bank. I've dealt with people in that situation too. So do those two things to start. How much am I going to be able to rent it for? And what do I have to put into it to do that? As well as the net sheet sales approach.
I love it. And now let me share this insight and tell me what you think, Steve, is that what I often tell clients is it's not all about cash flow. I often teach about this. It's a quadrant in all my blogs and books, is this four quadrant analysis. Cash flow is just one piece of the equation. Some people are like, well, I'm not going to cash flow, so it's not worth it. Well, are you going to break even or even a little less? Why sell when you could continue to pay down that mortgage by having a tenant in there pay the mortgage for you? Also, the market could be maybe in a rebound mode. And you're saying, hey, I could continue building equity here. There's also could be some tax benefits. So I would just like to say, don't hyper-focus on the cash flow issue. Look at the big picture and go, hey, if I can rent this and break even and just pay off my mortgage while I go somewhere else, man, that in 3-4 years from now, I could have, again, some additional equity in my portfolio that I would have walked away from by just coming to the plate and renting. What are Steve's thoughts?
Yeah, it's not just about cash flow, as you say. In fact, I've heard a lot of people out there use the acronym that income property is ideal, IDEAL. You get the income, that's the I. You get the depreciation, that's the D. You get the equity, that's the E, because your tenants are the ones paying into the property for you. You get the appreciation, that's the A, and you get the leverage, right? Because you've got a mortgage on that property. You get all the benefits of full ownership, but you've only got X amount of dollars into this because you borrowed. So, yeah, you may want to talk to your tax advisor. We're going to find people at KKOS and figure out what am I going to be on the table for here? What other benefits could I get? Because just cash flow might not matter. And you might live in California or New York City where cash flow is not going to happen no matter what you do. But these other dimensions could tip the scales in favor of keeping it as a rental.
Now, let me kind of go through. I had these, my last two houses, as I mentioned, were these house hack type things, I guess. You know, it's I've heard that term used, you know, for buying a residence, turning it into a rental. But and I didn't do it purposefully. It's just we bought a residence we wanted to live in and we moved out. And I was like, well, I don't want to sell real estate. I want to buy more real estate. So why am I going to sell this one? I'm still buying other rentals. So I just kept them. And one of the things I did when I looked at it was I looked at my mortgage. And on one of the houses, you know, I'd been in there six or seven years. And at that point in the mortgage schedule, you know, I was paying maybe $1,600, $1,700 a month on the mortgage, but about $600 of that was going to principal pay down because I'd had the property long enough that a big chunk of the money was paying down principal. So just keep that in mind. You know, I think a lot of people will look at, well, I've got to pay a $1,600 mortgage payment and I can only get rent for $1,500, so I'm going to be in the hole. Well, no, that $1,600 mortgage payment I'm paying, $1,200 of that's interest, or excuse me, $1,000 of that's interest, $600 is paying down the principal. I mean, if I'm getting $1,500 a month rent, I'm ahead of the game every month, big time. And so just take that into account. And I think that's more of an issue for property you've been in for a while, because the greater portion of your mortgage payment now is going towards principal.
Yeah, and I want to just add to that. I've called this before a forced savings plan, because you may say, well, I'm upside down, just like Matt said, I'm only getting $1,500 in rent and $1,600 mortgage, but $600, so I'm going to have to come out of pocket $100. But where's that $100 going? It's going right down into the equity of the home. Well, some of us out there, it's harder than heck to put $100 a month into an IRA or 401k. Unless it's on autopilot or a job, most of us are pretty crappy at saving and sending a check for $100 to a bank every month and saving. But if you got to keep that mortgage going, you're forced to do it. And at the end of the year, using Matt's figures there, you've just put $600 a month into paid down mortgage, which is in the result equity, as long as and this is a property you're going to hold 5 to 7 years. So you're going to sit out the ups and downs. You are going to get that equity back. And so it's $600 a month times 12. Man, I just dropped $7,200 into a savings account, boom, by only putting $100 a month into the account. So I'm saying, I mean, you're getting, it's like your banker's matching you, you know, it's like your own little 401k with a match, you know, your renter's matching, who knows. But I just think it's really important to look at the big picture and not just that net cash flow.
Yeah, it's way better than any savings account, because you get all those different benefits from it. Like you said, because those mortgages, they are front loaded with interest. I think it's the first 7 to 10 years, but that's mostly what you're paying. And after that, whether it's you, whether it's a tenant, whether it's a little bit of both, a lot higher percentage of that rent is actually paying it down. So it can really, really accelerate in your favor.
Now, Steve, let's talk about the opposite scenario, though. Let's talk about someone that's got, you know, let's say, you know, they've got a property they bought for $250,000 and now it's worth $500,000. They got a lot of equity in it. They've been in it for a while and their thinking is, well, I'll sell it. And I'm going to get all that equity out. You know, I'll get the sale of home exemption so I can avoid taxes on it. And I'll have this $250,000, let's say, to now go and invest. Let's talk about it. Should I use that cash and go buy properties somewhere else, find the performing rental real estate market for my money? Or again, should I hold, rent that property? I mean, there's other options, maybe a home equity line of credit or something to otherwise tap that equity. But let's talk about trying to use the equity in the home instead to buy other properties, whether it's sell or a home equity line of credit. What's your thoughts and experiences there?
Well, I'm going to give you the answer that you've given me many times on our calls together, which is it depends, right? So you've got to do that same step at the very beginning of this. You know, how much are you going to get and what is the opportunity cost of that money, right? What kind of rent are you going to get? Because then we can look at some other properties out of state. That's what I spend most of my time doing, is helping people buy properties in the Midwest and in the South. And we can go, all right, with that $250,000, that's going to put you into probably 10 properties. You could get 10 single family residences for that amount of money. And we can run projections on all that and look at the cash flow that's going to be left on the table. And in those kind of markets, you will have the cash flow. So, you know, where you might not have that in California, you have a ton of equity, but you won't have the cash flow. So then we can compare those things against each other. And I'd be very shocked if you didn't have a lot more cash flow doing this route than holding the rental in our hypothetical California house here. So you've got to know what the score is here. What is the opportunity cost? I've got a client we're doing this with right now, selling a property in California and actually a rental in Arizona too. And we ran the numbers, right? Selling, harvesting that equity out of the properties is going to get them more cash flow at the end of the day than keeping those. Even if we make some fixes and we try to really get those performing and more optimized, we're still going to beat the pants off of what they've got going right now by moving out of state to places with better rent-to-value ratios.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it goes without saying, and I want to do justice to a lot of the debt strategists out there. Sweep, we need to have him back on the show here out of Honolulu. And I know Randy Lubke has been on our show talking about debt reduction strategies, HELOCs, taking advantage of that equity without selling. Can we do a refi on our primary, get a lower payment, and harvest some of that equity to use as a down payment on our next house and still have it cash flow? I mean, you could have a renter paying for the refi loan monthly cost, the monthly loan cost on that refi, but strip out equity tax-free for your down payment on your next house so that you get the best of both worlds. And I think this is where using a quality loan officer is critical, someone that understands small business, understands rental property. And if you just walk into your Main Street bank or credit union, heaven forbid, they're going to be like, oh, Freddie Mac, you know, they're going to just give you this rigmarole. And if you don't fit in their little box, you're going to walk out totally beaten down. So this is where working with a strategist is so important too, because you've got to look at creative lending options. Steve, thoughts on that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Some of these community banks, as well as some of the big national banks, like Chase, for example, if you go in there and say, yeah, I want to buy out of state rental properties and I want to do a HELOC here. I mean, yeah, you don't fit in the box. You could have an 800 FICO score.
No, their brains explode.
Oh yeah. 800 FICO, $500,000 in the bank, and they're going to treat you like a bankrupt drug addict. Like, you're crazy. What are you doing in here?
Yeah.
So yeah, you've got to have a quality loan officer. And, you know, I'm sure all of us have good referrals on that stuff for anybody who wants them. But this, to a degree, becomes a lot like pushing numbers around on the paper, right? Is a HELOC going to be the better solution for me? From a tax perspective, yeah, you're going to have to pay interest on the HELOC. Found what that does is, if you analyze that out-of-state rental that you used the HELOC for the down payment on, which a good lender will let you do that, as long as the quote-unquote borrowed down payment funds are secured, meaning they're borrowed against real property, they'll typically let you do that. But what that's going to do is it's going to take your cash flow a little bit down, because you got to service that HELOC. But it's going to make your rate of return skyrocket, because you have so much less cash into the deal, because technically, you know, you borrowed it, right? So I think if you're somebody, hey, I want to get a really killer rate of return on my money, if it's cash flow, you may want to, I want to harvest the equity.
Hey, Mark, you're the resident CPA on the line here. So, but I want to talk about the tax ramification on selling the home. And as we talk, maybe harvesting some of that money to buy other rentals or buy other property. But what if you keep the rental? We have a certain period of time, right? I mean, if I live in that property for over 2 years and I move out and turn it into a rental, I still have 3 years until I sell it, that I can still get the sell of home exemption on all the equity I had when I lived there. Is that right?
Yeah, I like the way you said that, and because I was feeling I was going to have to correct my amazing partner on the show here, but he said it just right. You can avoid the tax on the equity you built while it was a rental. Okay, now and let me
residence.
Well, it was a residence. And so now let me restate what Matt said for any of you out there that are like, whoa, that was a deep thought. Let me just put it in perspective. So let's go back to Matt's example where you bought a home for $250,000. Now it's worth $500,000. Let's not worry about the mortgage balance and the analysis that Steve's going to go through on your possible rent income, your equity, your net sheet. Am I going to go deploy this money partially for a new residence and partially for rentals? Am I going to keep it? All that doesn't matter from the IRS perspective. They want to know, did you sell or did you turn it into a rental? And what day did you do that? So if I bought it for $250,000, it's worth $500,000. And on that day, I turn it into a rental. Matt is absolutely correct. For up to 3 years, I can still pull the trigger and sell it and I will not pay tax on that 250 grand of equity that I created while it was my residence. But the law changed 6 years ago, and these 1031 exchanges and the sale of home exemption was getting abused, where people would turn it into a rental and then sell it as a personal residence, and then it just disappeared off the books. And the IRS is like, whoa, 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 whoa. It was a rental for a while. What about all this depreciation you took and all that? So there is a day of division. So what I recommend to a lot of clients is that if this has got built-in equity and you are going to turn it into a rental, you've got to pad your file. You've got to create a picture of what did this rental look, this property look like on that day it converted to a rental. And this is where I recommend pay for an appraisal. $400, $500, pay for a cheap appraisal. Tell the appraiser you want it appraised as high as possible within ethical limits. You know, I want you to appraise it as high as possible, because later when you go to sell it as a rental 3 years from now, and now the property went from 500 to 600 grand in value, you're going to pay tax on that incremental increase. But if the appraisal came in at 550 and you sold it for 600 but 2 years later, now you're only paying tax on the difference between the appraisal as of the date you did the conversion. So that appraisal is critical. And as Steve, I know, wants to comment here, I'll just set him up for this, is when you're going through this whole analysis, not only is just the broker opinion helpful, but if you're going to refi or do a HELOC, someone's going to do an appraisal. Get a copy of it. Done. Boom. Steve, thoughts?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're definitely going to get a copy of it. I had this conversation with a seller yesterday that, you know, just because somebody tells you they're going to pay you a price for the house doesn't mean they're going to be able to buy it. Doesn't mean the appraisal will come in. So oftentimes the appraisal, that could just double as your comparative market analysis. You can get both of them if you want. A realtor will do the comparative market analysis for free in most cases. But yeah, if you're going to do a HELOC, an appraisal is going to happen. And so that's going to tell you, hey, if I do sell this, how is the end buyer's appraiser going to look at this? Am I going to get this deal done? And that'll give you a great additional source of information, and also give you all the tax information that you need so Mark can do his thing.
Now, one other thing here to keep in mind is we went through this scenario Mark just gave here. We got the property bought for $250. It's now worth $500. You decide, you know what, I'm going to keep it as a rental. And let's say you're two years down the road and now it's worth $600. Again, if you sell it, you're going to pay tax on that difference of increase from 500 to 600, the value increase of when it happened when it was a rental. The value increase you had as a residence, you can use as the sale of home exemption. But let's say you don't sell. Let's say you end up holding it for 5 years as a rental. Now you're outside the sale of home exemption, though. You've lost it. The sale of home exemption evaporates. It's got a three-year time clock on it. And if you hold that property past 3 years after moving out and moving it into a rental, you will not be able to use the sale of home exemption on that property.
And that's right. And right when we step into the 1031 world, where a lot of clients will, for those unfamiliar with the 1031 exchange, again, lots of resources on our sites and books to help you with that, to get up to speed, some YouTube videos, in fact. But 1031 exchange, you at that point would say, well, I'm going to sell it, harvest that same profit, and go buy three rentals. And you can sell one and buy three. You can sell three and buy one. As long as you buy something of equal or greater value, you can avoid all that tax at that point. So even if you miss out on the sale of home exemption window, you can still jump into the 1031 world when that time comes. So there's always an option. And this is where people need to pay for a little bit of advice here and there. You know, Steve is an excellent consultant on the real estate side. You do not want to call Matt and I on helping you find a rental or analyze that rental. We call Steve for that advice. But if you want to, but you've also got to talk about the tax issue or the legal issue. So pay for a few consults here and there. And remember, you get what you pay for. If you start calling everybody asking for free advice, that advice may not be exactly what you need to hear, because you're getting free advice. Be cautious.
Totally true. Totally true. You're at a fork in the road there on that scenario, Mark. You know, you've owned this property as a rental, you've built up equity, and yeah, is it a 1031? Or the HELOC's really great at that time, because, you know, a loan is, you're not going to pay taxes on a loan. It's a HELOC. But that's when you get the real estate professionals to come in there and evaluate, okay, what's this going to do to cash flow if we pull out a HELOC? What kind of cash flow is it going to pull in other markets? Will it offset that interest to an acceptable level for you? And if not, we've got a ton of equity, but this thing isn't going to perform if I pull out a HELOC.
1031 is awesome. It's almost like the IRS wants you to have real estate, I swear.
Oh, yeah. It's a phenomenal. And I want to say this in summary, and then, Steve, we want to hear from you on how people can get in touch with you and get your advice one-on-one. But, guys, all of our listeners out there, real estate needs to be a part of your portfolio. It needs to be a part of your asset allocation. Whether it's storage units, single-family homes, low-income housing, mobile homes, commercial, I don't care. Find something that speaks to you and start studying and learning about it and shopping. It's a great tax strategy. It's going to help you retire with more financial security. It's just so, so important. And Matt and I don't sell real estate, but we consult with thousands of clients every year, and our successful clients own real estate. There's no doubt about it. It's the way it is. Mm-hmm. I know Matt will have some closing comments on that too, but Steve, how do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, they're welcome to give me a call personally anytime at 801-362-3392. That's 801-362-3392. That goes right to me. I'm a real person. Or they can email me at steve@norada, N-O-R-A-D-A, realestate.com, and I can give them any real estate advice. They can talk. We build new fourplexes and triplexes here in Utah, where I live, for investor clients. We do a ton of out-of-state stuff as well. And so, yeah, any generic advice, or if they're looking to get into properties, happy to chat about that too.
Love it. Fantastic. Steve, thanks for being with us. Yeah, just phenomenal advice, and I love the topic. Matt, the man, the myth, the legend, take us out with some final advice here too. What do you got?
Yeah, now we still had question of the week. I don't know if you want to squeeze that in or move it into next week.
We got to hit that, don't we? Okay, and I know you prepped
the
question.
Let me give you my final thought on this topic. Okay. We'll kind of close out the topic, then we'll end with question of the week here. But the last thought I had was just, and I've said this before, there's three ways you build wealth: business ownership, real estate, and paper assets, stocks, bonds, that stuff. So there's no other way. Those are the three things. We talked about the big one here, real estate. Appreciate Steve's comments, and hopefully you found this insightful, very helpful to me, and I found this to be a successful strategy turning your residence into a rental.
No, I love it.
All right, Mark,
Matt's lived it.
You got a question of the week?
Yeah, no one turn off your TV. Don't turn off the radio yet. This is important. Last week, the question was, and we had a winner, and oh my gosh, for a half hour before the show, I was just clicking through some emails and looking off and on, hoping I'd find it. Someone replied during the show last week and won. You know who you are. Email me again. I'll match up the emails. We did have a winner. The question was, if grandma died and she had a wonderful will witnessed three times and notarized twice and gold plated, and she had a trust, it went with it, and it was notarized and witnessed, and everything was clear and concise, and she had all of her documentation together, but they never transferred title on the property, even though it was mentioned in the will, mentioned in the trust, but they didn't transfer title. Is she still going to get sucked into probate? And we had a winner say, yes, poor grandma. Grandma's family is going to go through probate. Grandma's going to be up in heaven. She's up partying, But so you've got to deal with probate if you don't fund the trust. So folks, again, an estate planning tip is always make sure that all of your assets are deeded to the name of the trust. We'll walk you through it when we do your estate plan. We did have a winner. We'll be sending out a copy of either mine or Matt's book. Matt, just a minute left here, a minute and a half. What do you have a question for us for next week so our listeners can win another copy of our book?
I'm going to make a quick question here. I've got to shorten this up. So question of the week this week is, let's say you own a vacation rental. We've had lots of clients getting into vacation rentals. You lease it out to a tenant. They come in. They trash the place. You got $5,000 in damages. Question is, who's responsible for that damages? That's the question of the week this week. You own the vacation rental, lease it out to a tenant for a week. They trash it, $5,000 of damages. Are you going to be able to collect from them or not?
Ooh, I want to know the answer to that. That's a good one, Matt. Gosh, I love my partner. Well, guys, listeners, we love you. We love being here with you every week. This is such an important part of our lives. I think Matt and I benefit the most oftentimes from the show, and we're grateful to be here with you every week. So please keep listening, share it on your social media, let people know about our show, and give us a call if we can ever be of service. Matt, any final tip? Just say it. Just throw it out there. Whatever.
Hey, you know, I appreciate you being here, Mark. Thanks for that comment. Thanks for being with us, guys. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.